Hello, everyone. Welcome into Young Lads, episode 37 of this podcast. Peter Defeat Jr. here with me, or with you. Harris Eisenberg on the other side of your screen, all the way from New York, Long Island, New York, where the Islanders kind of rolling right now. Harris, I see you got the mustache there. Very hard to see with the peach fuzz.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's not an ideal situation because we're a ginger family over here. Well, at least I am. But, you know, as long as they keep winning, this thing's sticking around. So we're just putting it out.
Speaking of keep winning, the Yankees are rolling. The Marlins, not so much. Rodon, really good start from him last night. Nestor Cortez the other night before that. Stroman's been looking good. He had his first start in Yankee Stadium. Offense, bunch of dogs.
Dude.
Bunch of dogs. I don't know if you were watching MLB Network this morning. I know you work for them. But D-Row, I'll have to send it to you on Twitter. D-Row had a really nice you know how he does like these like animations of different things and it's like funny things? He had Camp Bow Wow and he just had a bunch of different Yankees as different dogs. And like Judge was a Great Dane. Stanton was a Mastiff. Verdugo was a Chihuahua, stuff like that. German Shepherd was Stroman, but I mean, dogs rolling right now. Hate to say it, but they are.
Here's the thing about this Yankees team, and I'm going to sound a little bit repetitive from last week, but when is the last time the Yankees had this sort of non-Yankee way energy? I mean, you can't even remember. The only time I can remember they had even a glimpse of energy like this was when Nick Swisher came to the team in 2009. And the little mohawk thing that he would do and just like he'd be all fiery and whatever. That was the last guy who really injected this sort of personality into the club. Like this team, you know, Marcus Stroman running out to the field on opening day in the Bronx, pumping the crowd up. Nobody's ever done that. Alex Verdugo barking in the dugout, then dropping an F-bomb at the camera. Unbleeped out, by the way. Nobody's ever done that. I mean, you got him barking to the roll call. You got Juan Soto bowing, signing baseballs right before the first pitch starts. I mean, this team is just, it's personality riddled and skill riddled, and they're just playing a good ball. And I'm telling you, when the vibes are high, you know, you just play better, man. I mean, you play ball when the vibes are high. Everything goes well. 9-2 right now, and I'll make my point here on the pitching. Stroman's been terrific. And I'm not surprised that he's been this good. If anyone was surprised, I think you are failing to watch. Because this guy, I mean, he was an all-star the first half of the year last year. And then got injured. And, you know, he had a solid tenure with the Mets. It just got overshadowed because the dude wouldn't shut up on Twitter. But Carlos Rodon, I mean, three starts for him. This is the Carlos Rodon that we signed up for. The first start, you know, he didn't make it past the fifth inning, but I appreciated the fact that he went out there against a Houston lineup and just battled his way through. He didn't have his best control, only allowed one run through 4 1/3. He battled in that start. I could appreciate that. Second start against Arizona, he was really good. 5 1/3, gave up a couple runs, walked a couple batters, struck out three. He did give up two homers, but again, just limiting the damage. And then last night was the Carlos Rodon that we're paying. Six innings, you know, didn't give up an earned run, six Ks. I mean, his confidence looks there. He lost a lot of weight this offseason. He lost that stupid mustache, which is stupider than mine. And, you know, this guy, I mean, he goes out there and you could just see it on his face. Like, he doesn't have a lot of personality. He doesn't really open up to the media, but you could just see, like, on his face that he cares. He wants to redeem himself after last year. He just wants to go out there and try hard. And the fans giving him a standing ovation last night, I mean, it's got to make him feel good. So, again, that's kind of the big kicker here is the Carlos Rodon start to the season has been terrific, and then just the attitude on offense. I said it last week, but just taking at-bats for the team, the approaches have just all changed this year in a way where Juan Soto takes a pitch a ball and a half off the plate in a 3-1 count with the bases loaded to draw a walk. You know, these guys that they signed in years past swing at those pitches. So that's just me breaking down the game a little bit, but I love it. There's nothing not to love right now.
Yeah, and I mean, you're starting to get to a lot of production from other guys other than just Soto and Judge like you were hoping for. With Verdugo, hit a big home run last night. Volpe's still off to a really hot start. He's been better defensively this year than he was last year. Gleyber Torres is still meddling around a little bit at second base, but you're starting to get production from other guys other than that are not named Judge, and which is what happened the last couple of years, where if Judge was either out of the lineup or not performing that well, you had to hope and pray that somebody else, like a DJ LeMahieu, Josh Donaldson, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, you know, Aaron Hicks, of all people, Joey Gallo, you had to kind of hope and pray that they might get into two or three hits that day and just help and help you win. But now it's like, okay, if Judge is off, if Judge is off that game, you got Soto, you got Verdugo, you got Volpe, you know, you're getting key production from a lot of different sources that you were the last couple of years.
And Volpe's the unsung hero of the offense. I don't know what his stats are now, but entering last night, he was tied for the league lead in batting average with Orlando Arcia. I don't know how that's possible. Tied for seventh in hits, third in OPS. I mean, his at-bats have been terrific. He had a big home run the other night. I mean, this guy has really taken the whole... He's taken a big step so far this year. And remember, you know, he hit 209 last season. Yeah, he hit 20 home runs and won a gold glove, whatever. But everyone knocked him because it's like, hey, you can't have a shortstop batting 209. I feel like that's the one position where it's like, all right, if the dude can't hit over 200, like, there's a problem. So he has fixed his swing. He has fixed his approach. And I feel like just the approach of everybody with the new hitting coach has been terrific. James Lawson, I believe, is the hitting coach. So, just a great start. Great start. Pat Rosler is also the assistant hitting coach, and I throw that name out there because he was with the Mets during their 2015 World Series run and when they went to the wild card in 2016 and had those great offenses. So I love the moves that they've made. I still think the front office is a bunch of dinosaurs, but they have seemed to adjust it, and life's good right now. Like, there is no complaint. Zero.
And also, excuse me. And also, if you keep playing like this the way you are, you're playing what? They're 10-2 right now. So if you keep playing to where you're winning, you know, 10 out of every 12 games, or even if you just go down to like 7 out of every 10 games, and then by June 1st, hey, Gerrit Cole is actually going to be back. I think it's not June 1st, July 1st. But hey, Gerrit Cole doesn't need Tommy John. He's actually coming back. Now that just adds another player. That's kind of like a trade piece coming over to your team at the trade deadline. So if they can keep playing like this the way they are, Ian Hamilton out of the bullpen has been terrific. I know they lost Loaiza to Tommy John surgery, but people have been able to fill that spot relatively easily in the Yankees bullpen. So it's kind of just they're getting off to a hot start, and they're not all entirely intact as far as starting rotation goes.
And the good news on Cole is that he did play catch yesterday, and you know the reports from Aaron Boone said that it went well. So who knows? It could be earlier than July 1st. I heard June 1st as well is on the table. But hopefully sometime in between then, I think would be great. I don't think it's going to be June 1st. I think it'll be somewhere in between those two dates that we just gave you. But hey, listen, if the Yankees keep rolling like this, I don't care who's playing for us. Just win ball games.
Yeah, and I think they're going to try to keep it more towards July 1st just because they don't want anything to happen to Gerrit Cole. They still have a lot of years and a lot of money left on that arm, and they're hoping that that arm can stay healthy and produce for the entirety of that contract. So I wouldn't be surprised if July 1st turns into middle July, turns into August 1st, especially if the Yankees are rolling like they are now. There's no need to rush him back. There's no need to get him injured if they can prevent it. But I know one team that we just ranted on a little bit too pre-show that you talked about, I want to tee you up for this, is the Marlins. They are 1-11. They made the playoffs last year. They are the first, or they were the first team to make the playoffs, and then the year after start the season 0-9. They are just going in a completely different direction, and I wanted to get your rant that you just spilled to me actually taped and recorded. So go ahead.
Yeah, so I was actually thinking about this last night. I actually talked to some people who are Marlins fans, and they have, you know, first of all, I didn't know that they were passionate Marlins fans in New York, but they were ranting about Pete Bendix, the former Rays GM, now the president of baseball operations with the Miami Marlins. Now, look, this is a Marlins team that made the playoffs last year, so you expected this team to be on the rise, but if you looked at this offseason, that is the biggest question. What the heck are they doing? First of all, Kim Ng, right? I think that's how you pronounce it. They let her go. They let her walk. There was a lot of controversy there. You know, she wasn't making the baseball decisions. She wanted to make the baseball decisions. They told her no. They ended up parting ways anyways. So they bring in Pete Bendix. And as you and I know, right, great baseball mind, was the GM of the Rays, was terrific. But a lot of people are forgetting this. Pete Bendix, when he was the GM of the Rays, was not making the final baseball decisions. Eric Neander was making the final baseball decisions. So Bendix naturally gets a promotion, which, you know, clap it up, great for him. We're all happy for the guy, right? But this just doesn't feel like a Rays lineage team that someone from the Rays front office would be taking over. Now, let me explain. Andrew Friedman took over the Dodgers when the Dodgers were consistently a playoff team. Look how that has turned out. They won a World Series, even though, in my opinion, it was a fraudulent World Series. They won a World Series. They've been in the playoffs every year. Chaim Bloom took over the Red Sox when they made the playoffs back-to-back years. Won the World Series. So, you know, there's a lineage there. The Miami Marlins made the playoffs for the first time since 2020. But besides 2020, they made the playoffs for the first time since 2003. And they said, oh, you know, we got a good little core going on. You know, we got some good pitching, even though now Yuri Perez had Tommy John surgery. You know, instead of keeping the front office and keeping everything intact, they kind of blow it up. Like, Bendix comes in, he trades John Birdie, which, in my opinion, I thought was a great trade for the Yankees. But if you look at his numbers, like, I get it, he's on the wrong side of 30. He's 34 years old, but he's got a WRC plus over 100. He hit 294 last year. He's a great glove. That was a trade that, if you're a Marlins fan, I guess is a bit of a head-scratcher because you're trying to compete in this division, right? Like, the Braves, the Phillies, this is a tough league, you know? The dog agrees with me. This is a tough league. So it just doesn't feel like a Rays lineage team to get taken over. Now, I'm happy for Bendix, obviously, to get the promotion. But if you look at the job that he's done, he didn't really improve the team this offseason, and he didn't address a lot of need. Like Sandy Alcantara, we all knew was down, right? Did they address the starting rotation in the offseason? No. Did they address getting a third baseman who was ready to play right now after they traded John Birdie? No. Did they keep Jake Berger, who was a deadline acquisition, who ended up hitting 36 homers but hit most of his homers with the previous team that he was playing for? Yes. So we've all seen how that has worked out. Daniel Vogelback is a perfect example. So they just didn't improve the roster. I felt like as a team, when you have the manager of the year, they just did not improve the roster. And I feel bad for Skip Schumacher because I feel like he's getting the heat for this when he doesn't deserve it. So, I mean, I don't know if this is on Bendix necessarily. I think it's a poor roster, so I guess it kind of is. But it just doesn't feel like the right team for that Rays lineage to have taken over, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, we talked about it a little bit last week, too, when they were still winless. The starting rotation is without Sandy Alcantara, without Yuri Perez now. Edward Cabrera has been up and down. Jesus Luzardo is your ace right now, and he's not pitching like an ace. Trevor Rogers is in that rotation. And after he won Rookie of the Year, I think it was like 2021 or so, and was or at least he finished top three in Rookie of the Year, and he made the All-Star team, has been terrible. A.J. Puck, who's in that rotation, has been terrible. Who else is in that rotation right now? Those are the only names that I can think of. Now, they are injured, though. If you do have Yuri Perez, who was only 20 at the time, or 20 now, but still a better pitcher than A.J. Puck, and if you have Sandy Alcantara, who won the Cy Young Award in 2022, if you have those guys in your rotation, it might be a little bit of a better team, but to your point, there's no offense.
No.
Luis Arraez at some points was that offense because he was hitting like 700 for the first 6 months of the season. And now he's hitting, I don't even think he's hitting 200 right now.
It took him, I think, like 18 at bats for him to get his first hit.
Yeah. You got Josh Bell on that team, but he's gone at midway through the season. Jake Berger still. You got rid of Garrett Cooper. You got rid of John Birdie. And then you tried to bring in Christian Betancourt to be your catcher. He's been terrible. Bendix also traded with the Rays for Vidal Brujan. Both of those guys have still yet to get a hit this year.
Vidal. Oh, boy.
So I think he's trying to build it in the image of of what the Rays had. And I think he just got on some tough luck because Alcantara is still going to be out for the rest of this year. Now you have Yuri Perez that just got injured this year. So that rotation's kind of in shambles, and it's not going to be the rotation that you want it to be until next year. But the problem is, what other pieces are you going to have? You got Max Meyer, who was the number three prospect in the system, came back and has pitched well, but he's still a young arm that's going to have a lot of restrictions on him. So the only thing is that Jesus Sanchez and Jazz Chisholm aren't really playing the way that you want them to play. Yeah, Jazz Chisholm can hit you a lot of home runs, but he hasn't been healthy the last couple of years either. So I don't know what they have in their system. I mean, I can look real quick on the MLB app, but there's not a whole lot of help coming through the system for the next couple of years.
Well, I do know one thing. You know, like last year, I worked in the Midwest League, and the Miami Marlins High affiliate was there. And in the Josh Bell trade last year, the Marlins traded their first round pick from 2021. Khalil Watson went the other way to the Guardians, who there were projections that he could have been the number one overall pick. But still, that's a first round pick that you traded for temporary Josh Bell. I mean, yeah, you're right, Peter. Like, this system is nothing outstanding. Like, are we going to hope that in 2026, Kemp Alderman is going to be the Kemp Alderman that was at Ole Miss? I don't know. Javier Sanoja, I got to see. He's a nice little bat, but again, his projections, it's going to take a long time for him to get up to the big leagues. So, yeah, I mean, this is a system that, you know, there's nothing that – nothing really stands out. Other than a few guys, and from first glance at this, I think there's only five guys on this top 30 list who are major league projected to be there in 2024. That's including Max Meyer as well, who's already with the club. So, I mean, it's going to be a long sled here for the Miami Marlins. I mean, I don't know how much of an impact Khalil Watson would have made if he stayed in the Marlins system, but, I mean, let's say he is raking in the Guardian system. The Miami Marlins are never going to be able to lift that trade down, which was not made by our good pal Peter Bettis.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the ETAs. Noble Meyer, who is their number one prospect, was drafted, what was it, last year? Yeah, 2023. He's got a 2026 projection, and that's if everything goes okay, because he's only 19 years old. I mean, he's already had Tommy John surgery once, and knock on wood, you know, nothing bad happens to him, but this is barring any injury or anything. 2026, the best. Thomas White, same thing, 19 years old, drafted in 2023. That was their competitive balance pick. 2027 ETA. Max Meyer's up right now, but like I said, he came off an injury. He's only 25 years old. He's going to be handled with care for the rest of this year. Victor Mesa Jr. is their fourth prospect. He's projected to be up next year, 22 years old. Barring any injury, he could be up. And then you just look, 2025, 26, 26, 26. Their number 10 prospect is 2029. Mm. And if you look at it now, I know we're going to talk a little bit about the Baltimore Orioles just because of who they're about to call up or who they are calling up. But their 10th prospect in their system is next year projected. Seth Johnson, a right-handed pitcher. They got guys now, they're littered with talent all across their prospect board. But you're talking 2024, 25, 24, 24, 26 for Enrique Bradfield Jr., 24, 25. So you talk about two contrasting systems, and that's a team with also a lot of young guys. Jackson Holliday is 19 years old that just got called up, which we can dive into a little deeper. But what I say all that to say, their system's kind of a mess right now. And if your top three prospects are all pitchers, you have to hope that A, they don't get hurt, and B, Noble Meyer and Thomas White can kind of mature fast enough to where they can help out this rotation, because you're going to lose Alcantara in the next couple of years if you don't compete, because I don't know if he signed anything long term with them. I don't remember him signing a long term deal. Jesus Luzardo, you're going to have to make a decision on. AJ Puck's not going to be in your rotation. You better not even be in your bullpen. Trevor Rogers don't know what he's going to be like. So you have to hope that they mature fast enough to where they can help this team in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be – and again, like, Atlanta's got all these big league ready players locked up. I know that's a little different, but everybody on that team, for the most part, that's a core player in the Braves is locked up. Phillies, all their players, pretty much. Harper, locked up. Wheeler, locked up. Nola, locked up. Castellanos, you got till next year. Schwarber, you got till next year. And I don't think those guys are leaving. Like, those guys love playing in Philly. So – yeah, it's going to be a long road for the Marlins, and they're just not as plenished of a system as a lot of these other systems, like the Baltimore Orioles, who, I mean, before Jackson Holliday just got called up, the Norfolk Tides, like, they could beat the Mets right now. Like, they're that good.
Jackson Holliday on that team had the seventh best OPS, and his OPS was 1,300. That's how crazy they've been with the young talent that they have down there. And I mean, you look at, we can go into Jackson Holliday now just because that's the big news coming out, but you look at the different levels that he's played at. Last year he played in A ball, high A ball, double A, and triple A. Triple A, he batted .267, but only played in 18 games. You're talking about double A where he batted .338, .314 in high A, and .396 in low A. And he got 53 at-bats in low A before getting called up. And now this year, sorry, his OPS is only 1,000, not 1,300, 1,000. .333 in triple A, 1,000 OPS in 42 at-bats. He's got 14 hits in 42 at-bats. He scored 18 times. And he's only struck out 8 times in those 10 games. Walked 12. So you're talking about a guy that got it right away. And I mean, he's only the first of many to come up in that system too, because the Baltimore Orioles have Colby Mayo, Heston Kerstedt, Connor Norby's getting ready to get called up. I mean, they got a lot of players. I mean, Samuel Basalo is their number two prospect, and the only reason he's not called up yet is because he's a catcher in first base. And they got a catcher pretty much locked up in Adley Rutschman, and they have Mountcastle at first base. So they're going to have to decide what they want to do with Mountcastle, because Colby Mayo is also a first baseman. But
yes.
I mean, they are just littered with talent in that organization. And Jackson Holliday is only 19 years old.
Yeah, I didn't realize.
I don't know if you were doing it at 19, but I was going to school at this time.
Yeah, I was definitely going to school. April.
So that would be April of
COVID. Sitting through COVID. Yeah. That was 19. I'm young. Sadly. Yeah. But yeah, man, like, he killed it in the spring too. Like, he hit .311 in spring. Everyone thought like he was going to get called up. I wasn't surprised when they said he was going to start the year in AAA, because I just, you know, just a feeling. And, you know, the Orioles, like, Jorge Mateo's a pretty serviceable shortstop, and you got Gunnar Henderson too on that side of the field. It's whatever. But I mean, Jackson Holliday, like, the time has come. I mean, this is a hyped up prospect first of all, a family lineage. For those who don't know, Jackson Holliday is the son of former big league great Cardinal Rocky Yankee Oakland L and the current Oklahoma State hitting coach Matt Holliday. I mean, the kid could just flat out hit, and he's just like, I just notice, like I talked to somebody who broadcasts the games in the Orioles system, and just like the way he goes about his business, like, he's not this overly flashy kid. He doesn't have a big personality. He just goes out there and just plays ball, man. And he plays it damn good. And maybe that's just the attitude the Orioles like. Like, they got some personalities on their team. Don't get me wrong. But, like, this guy is simply, he's going to come up and he's going to play. And that's all he's going to care about. And that's okay. Like, Adley Rutschman pretty much does the same thing. You know? So, I mean, this is big time for the Orioles. And now I don't know if you feel this way, Peter. I feel like the Orioles now have become must-see TV for the above-average baseball fan.
Yes. You're talking about Rutschman. You're talking about Henderson, who was the Rook of the Year, by the way, last year. No big deal. Talk about Jackson Holliday now. Grayson Rodriguez on the mound. Corbin Burnes, who they just traded for this last year for nobody to the Brewers. You're talking about Mayo coming up, Kerstedt coming up. I mean, they have, if you are interested in watching young talent perform and mature right before your eyes, Colton Cowser, you know, at third base, if you're a fan of that, like, this is a team that you want to watch. You want to see how well they play, because you could potentially be looking at the next, like, core four type of deal like the Yankees had. Because if Rutschman, Holliday, Henderson, Cowser can all stay healthy together and stay with that team for a long period of time, you're looking at a very solid core four that you can just build a pitching rotation around. Because that offense should be good. I mean, all those guys can hit for average, hit for power. That offense should be good. It's just going to be about, can Grayson Rodriguez, Kyle Bradish, those guys, what are you going to do with Corbin Burnes after this year? Are you going to sign him long term or not? That's the only issue that they might have, is this starting rotation. So, but to your point, yeah. I mean, as long as they're on, like, they're on, I think Thursday on a showcase with MLB Network against the Red Sox. It's like, I don't understand why you wouldn't, especially if that's Jackson Holliday's major league debut. Why would you not want to see that? Why would you not want to see these guys that are all under the age of 23 perform, except for Rutschman? He's, 25.
Yeah, it's an exciting time for the Baltimore Orioles. And, I was listening to the network yesterday, and, it was actually the Red Sox-Orioles game. And one thing really stuck out, and I think is kind of underrated, at least from us, and probably gets talked about more in the Baltimore area, but the ownership change, I think, has a huge thing to do with all this. I think if they don't make the ownership change, they don't have Corbin Burnes right now. They probably keep Jackson Holliday in the gutter. I mean, I think there's just this huge life around it. Now, ownership has nothing to do with calling up Jackson Holliday. But ownership has something to do with driving a fan base and generating excitement. Like Camden Yards, I'm telling you, when that place is popping and is full, that's one of the best places to watch a baseball game. And for us as fans, at the end of the day, that's what we care about. We don't want to see 20 people in the Oakland Coliseum. We want to see 45,000 in Camden Yards walking on Utah Street before and after games, hours after. So, I mean, this is just, it's so exciting. Like, I don't know if you've ever been to Camden. I love Camden. I think it's a nice little ballpark area that they've built over there. And, that place is just going to be an absolute electric factory.
I've been on the outside of it. I've actually been on Utah Street. I went sometime in the winter, like 8 or 10 years ago. So obviously there wasn't any games, but I saw the facility and everything, and beautiful. But to your point, yeah, you want to see on TV, you want to see 45,000 fans, because when you can feel it through the TV, you know it's electric.
Yeah.
Like, how many times have we seen commentators kind of just call the play and then shut up and let the crowd take it away? I mean, we've seen that plenty of times, on Fox with Joe Buck, even though I don't really like him that much. He's really good at just letting the crowd noise, play its part during the game. And that's exactly what we want to hear, right? Dave and Andy did a great job of it when we were working with the Rays, about how they would just call the play and then shut up and get out of the way for everybody to kind of just soak in, what was going on. So yeah, to your point, hearing 45,000 people go electric, go crazy over a play or over a home run or over a game-winning, diving catch or whatever is great baseball that, like you said, a lot of people are going to want to watch more than they're going to want to see, three people golf clapping in Oakland.
Hey now, golf clapping, Masters this week. Hey now.
Who do you got?
Scotty. And he's going to blow it. He's going to blow everyone out. It's going to be over on Friday. But anyways, Let's go from some exciting baseball to a not so exciting time for a particular individual that the Orioles are actually playing in a series this week. That would be a Trevor Story of the Boston Red Sox. Very emotional in a press conference yesterday. He dislocated his shoulder, and he is once again hurt and out for the season. So Trevor Story, this is his third year in Boston, and he's only played 145 games for the Red Sox, and he won't play another one until 2025. So it's one of those things where they make the signing and it's like, oh, Boston's a big market. If he gets hurt and he stinks, they're gonna hate him. But like, you just gotta feel bad for the guy at this point, because other than Devers, And I guess you could throw Yoshida in there. Like, Trevor Story is kind of the big, big established superstar that they have, and he's barely been on the field.
Yeah, back-to-back years, we were talking about this too a little bit pre-show, back-to-back years where he's gotten injured and missed the rest of the year, and he was just finally back healthy from whatever the elbow injury was last year. We were talking about this, I think it's when he played against the Rays, he got hit on the elbow or something like that. There was a play that happened where he dinged his elbow up and he missed the rest of the year. I think it was with the Rays or against the Rays at the Trop. I could be completely wrong, though. Or was it his wrist? Did he break his wrist on a hit by pitch? Was it his elbow or his wrist?
Could have been his wrist, because he did have a wrist injury. I believe that was in 2022, though.
Okay.
Was the wrist injury. So
then maybe he missed the rest of the season in 2022, because I remember it's like something happened with the Rays. Anyways, they have 3 years left on this contract too. They haven't even gotten a full season out of him yet. And like you said, yeah, you just feel for the guy, because I mean, he was finally back healthy, and then it was just a routine play. But all he does is just go to his right, dive for the ball, and lands awkwardly on his shoulder, and now he dislocates his shoulder. Like, how unlucky is that, that you come back from whatever you had last year, finally healthy, having a good start to your season, and then it's gone. And you have to rethink all over. And I was listening to MLB Central earlier this morning, and Mark DeRosa kind of put it perfectly. He was finally over whatever it was from 2023 into the mindset of, okay, let's play a full 162. Which the Red Sox were playing pretty well too. And they just gave a lot of money to Rafaela, one of their big prospects too. But he's playing well. The team is playing well. They're off to a good start. And now he's got to change his mindset 10 games into the season for 2025 in Fort Myers. Because he can't even think about coming back for the playoffs, because he's done for 6 months.
Yeah.
And unless they're playing, you know, in November again for the World Series, which I don't think they will be. But he's done for the rest of the year, and now he's got to rethink all of this stuff. And now he's basically in a very long off-season mode, trying to get back to Fort Myers for 2025, which he should, because it's only a six-month recovery. So he should be fine and have a regular rehabbing off-season to get to spring training. But it's just, how can you not deteriorate your mind having to go through that every year? Because this is the last 2 years he's played. You said 146 games. He played most of that in 2021 when he first signed. And then the last 2 years, he's played, what, 50 games? Like, how can you not just let your mind wander and go, okay, how much more time do I have doing this? Because I can't keep rehabbing, coming back, getting injured, rehabbing, coming back, getting injured. You know, so it's a lot on the psyche.
Yeah, 43 games last year, and then obviously the 8 games this year, and that's it. And I mean, look, injuries are nothing new with Trevor Story. I mean, Colorado, he was consistently injured too. 2016, I mean, he had a season-ending injury at a Met game that I was at, which basically he would have won Rookie of the Year, had he not gotten injured. It's been a constant thing with him. And, you know, I know the Red Sox caused a little bit of controversy when they signed him initially, because it's like, all right, we're signing a shortstop and we still have Xander Bogaerts. What are we going to do? So I guess the backup plan kind of worked, because Bogaerts went to San Diego and Trevor Story is your shortstop, but he just hasn't been healthy. So, The Red Sox had a good week and a half. That good week and a half is now over. All the hope that the Red Sox fans had, I think, is now all gone. And yeah, you're right, man. Like, that is mentally challenging. I mean, you play 51 games in a span of 2 years. That's tough. That's not even 2 months of actual action. Of 24. 24 yeah, months.
I don't understand how he stays sane. Because me, like, you think about all that hard work that he did the end of 2023, and he's finally healthy, finally feels normal, has a full spring training, and then 8 games into the season, this fluke thing happens. So right now he's got to go, oh, I got to do it all over again. Like, that's one of the grinds about being a Major League Baseball player. Now, I know they get paid millions of dollars, and you could say all that, but, like, constantly being injured and constantly feeling like I can never get back to where I once was, it's got to, like, weigh on a guy's mind a lot more than, oh, I'm playing every day, but I'm batting, you know, 215.
Yeah.
Like, that's – you're at least playing every day. You might just be in a big slump. Something might be going wrong that season, but you're still playing. Trevor Story doesn't get to play anymore.
He's not going to get to go to the field. He's not going to be around his teammates. You know, that's tough. That's the little things that people don't understand. That's tough.
Yeah, and it's on a Boston team, too, that's 7-4 right now, that their offense has been looking amazing. Brian Bello at the top of that rotation has looked pretty good. Pivetta, Whitlock, both solid guys at the top of that rotation. It's weird. It's just I feel for the guy.
Yeah.
But I also want to touch on a team, I should say a division. The AL West. Kind of wanted to bring this up to you during pre-show, because I wanted to get your first initial thoughts. Should we be worried about the Houston Astros and Seattle Mariners? Both of them are 4-8, and Houston, who LeClerc, who's looked terrible this year to start the season, just gave up a game-winning home run.
Talk about Houston, or you talk about Texas?
Texas.
Texas.
So let's talk about both. Let's start with Houston, because Houston hasn't looked that great. And I had LeClerc on my mind because I was thinking about the state of Texas. Houston hasn't looked that great, and now they're injury-riddled in the starting rotation as well. I want to get your thoughts, too, about what Verlander said. In his little post-game, post-rehab start scrum that he had. But, I mean, should we be worried about Houston and Seattle? Because these are two teams that had, dare I say, World Series aspirations, especially with the moves that Seattle made to get even better than they were last year after missing the playoffs.
Yeah, Houston I'm not worried about, just because the history of them, their lineup, they're going to get Verlander back at some point. I know they just had one of their pitchers go down. Valdez was the one who went down. Well, we got to talk about this pitcher injury stuff too, because this is just ridiculous. But yeah, I'm not worried about them because I know their lineup's really good, and they'll be able to handle it to where they're going to be one of those teams that'll get in a wild card and make a big run, just what the Rangers did. Seattle, I would be genuinely concerned about. I mean, George Kirby, everyone had him as a dark horse Cy Young candidate. He looks terrible. Julio Rodriguez is batting under 180. And to me, you know, I was actually watching that game last night. They got down 5-0 early. They made a late push to try and get back into it. That lineup just does not scream just great, you know? It just does not scream World Series to me. It's just, I don't know why. It just doesn't. And if Julio's not carrying the team, I don't know someone in that lineup who will. Like, Mitch Haniger, cool, nice bat. Good to have him back in Seattle. Mitch Garver, you're lucky if you get 230 out of him. He's DHing now because Cal Raleigh's your catcher and you're batting him seventh. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just, the Mariners, I'd be worried about them because I think their margin for error is very thin. And there's been a lot of error there so far. And I don't know how soon they can turn it around.
Yeah, and to your credit too, just looking at the standings too, both of those teams are 4-8, but the run differentials are vastly different. Houston's got a zero run differential because the offense is still good. You still have Altuve, you still have Bregman, you still have Alvarez. So that offense is still good, but for the Seattle Mariners, it's minus 26. I mean, you get rid of Eugenio Suarez, you get rid of Teoscar Hernandez, and you don't really replace them with anybody of significant value. Maybe a Luke Raley, but he hasn't really done anything this year. So I think you're right. I think I'd be more worried about Seattle than Houston. But it's just that Houston, because the whole adage is you can't win a division in April, because you could sure lose it. And I don't know if the injuries are going to catch up to Houston, because you're without Valdez, you're without Verlander, you're without Urquidy, you're without two other of your big guys right now. And just, I'm afraid that if those guys can't make it back in time, that the rotation is not going to be able to hold down the fort for long enough, and they might fall out of it and fall from making the playoffs for the first time since what, 2016?
2016
was the last time that they didn't make the postseason. So that's the only thing that I'd be worried about with Houston.
Yeah, and I mean, you touched on Verlander, and I definitely want to go into that. Spencer Strider, Framber Valdez, Yuri Perez, Shane Bieber. I mean, there's more pitchers on that list, and it goes. I mean, Jacob DeGrom, you can throw on there.
Loaiza,
Garrett Cole. It's a UCL problem, elbow problem. You can throw on there. Anything that says elbow soreness is basically a telltale sign that this is probably Tommy John needed or related. And Verlander brought up a good point. Like, look, everyone's trying to throw as hard as they can. Everybody knows that. But here's the other thing, too, is that non-fastball. Now, I want to get your opinion on this because you pitched in college. I saw this graphic yesterday. Non-fastball usage by pitchers in Major League Baseball is well over 50%. I think it's over 52%. It might even be 53 or 54. So, and you got all these young kids now coming up, even at 13, 14 years old, trying to spin off breaking balls and sliders. And you know, now everyone throws a cutter as their primary pitch. So I feel like it's a mix of two things. Not only are guys just throwing their fastballs as hard as they can, but they're spinning more pitches than they should be, at least for the strain of the arm. And that's why the injuries are happening. So I just wanted to get your take on it. Is it the corking of the elbow when pitchers are spinning pitches, or is this just something fastball related?
No, I think you're right. I think it is a little bit of spinning, you know, fastball, slider, sweeper. I think those are the top four, slurve if you want to, whatever. But still, fastball or curveball, slider, sweeper. I think the more that you see pitchers go up with those usage, I think the more you're going to see people get injured, because you got to think, a lot of the guys before, what, 2016 were fastball changeup guys that threw their curveball, you know, 10% of the time, and they were fine. But now we're starting to get into the age of, okay, we need something that's going to move away more from the barrel than a changeup, and we need something that's going to bite more like a curveball. So fastball changeups out of the question, but fastball sliders is entered into the chat. So I think that's a big part of, and big reason why guys are getting so many more of these elbow injuries, because it takes a lot more torque and they're trying to spin the hell out of the baseball. They're trying to get to 3,000 RPMs and they're not being able to pronate their arm and decelerate it as much like they can with the fastball. Because on a fastball, you're going to pronate your arm a lot more. On a curveball, you have to take your arm with it. You know, a lot of guys, when I was in college and I was trying to learn a slider, they told me basically, I should have a baseball here. I should be like Orestes Estrada and have a baseball or something like next to me that the Rays do. But he told me basically, like, put on a seatbelt. And if you do that, there's no way to pronate your arm. So there's no way to really help the deceleration of your arm path. Now, I could be completely wrong about what I'm saying, but that's what I was told when I had my rotator cuff injury in high school. Was basically, hey, you have to learn how to decelerate better and how to pronate better. And I was able to, you know, basically be injury free for the rest of my college career. But yeah, and then the other thing too is that kids nowadays, and I mean, I coach in an academy right now, they want to throw faster at a young age. And I think it was Dr. Andrews that said your UCL doesn't really, the tendon, the muscles in there don't really mature until you're age 26. And now all these kids and all these parents want everybody to throw 70, 80 miles an hour at 13 to 17 years old. And it's unnatural. It's already unnatural to begin with throwing a baseball. It's the most unnatural thing you'll ever do in your life. But now you want to, at 13 years old, throw 80 miles an hour, which is even more unnatural. And I think that's the usage of the arms in the Little League and travel ball level are just getting too much. I can't tell you the last time, or I can't tell you how many times I've coached in a game, and I keep everybody at a strict 40 pitch count. In order to throw the next day, you have to throw 20 pitches. If I'm going to burn you for the weekend for Saturday, Sunday, if I'm going to start you game one on Saturday, you're going to go 40 pitches, maybe 50 pitches, depending on how well you are and what the situation is. But I can't tell you how many times we've played a game where a 12, 13 year old is thrown 80, 90 pitches. Like there's no need, right? There's no need at 13 years old to be throwing 80 pitches and trying to throw as fast as possible. So I think there's a lot of things that go into play. Now, is it as simple as saying the pitch clock is something that's hurting pitchers more?
I think that's a lame excuse.
Yeah, I think it's a let's throw something at the wall and see if it sticks type of thing. Because again, I forgot who I was listening to, but they were talking about how many times did you see a guy working fast to where they were their own pitch clock? You know, guys working 15 seconds in between pitches, how come they never got injured? And then you had other guys before the pitch clock that would take, you know, 3-4 minutes in between pitches, and they still got injured.
Yeah.
So I think that's a very lame duck excuse of just, okay, let's try to get this pitch clock eliminated. Because there's no secret that the players don't want it. You know, the pitchers don't want it. The batters don't want it. So I think that's just a lame excuse. But I think it's a lot of everything. A lot of younger guys wanting to throw too fast, too quick. And then now just the evolution of everybody's got to throw a slider and they got to throw it. You know, if you're going to throw 50 pitches, they got to throw it 25 times.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a lot of all of that has now manifested into this injury plague that we're now seeing Major League Baseball in.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like it's almost a given at this point. Like, I feel like it's a given if you're a pitcher and you haven't had Tommy John surgery, you're going to get it. Heck, like, I'm afraid to go play regular catch right now because, heck, I see everyone getting all these injuries. I don't want to mess it up. Like, I go play beer league softball on Sundays. I don't want to throw. Screw that. It's like Aaron Rodgers tearing his Achilles. Like, it's just a freak accident. Like, you just got to be careful.
Yeah. No, I mean, I still play in a men's league.
Yeah.
And that's something in the back of my, like, okay, if I hurt myself, do I get the surgery? Do I just stop playing? Like, what do I do? And I just keep thinking about that. I'm like, everybody's getting injured. Like, how is it that we've gotten to this point to where we've had so many Tommy John surgeries that we don't have an answer as to why it's happening?
Yeah.
We just have theories.
Again, it's just an unnatural movement of the arm. And everybody knows that. It's either, you know, thoracic outlet syndrome is becoming more of a thing too, where, you know, I remember Matt Harvey, when they explained Matt Harvey's thoracic outlet syndrome. I mean, if you have bad mechanics, like taking your arm all the way back away from your body to go pitch, like, that's how thoracic outlet syndrome occurs, is when your body, you know, your arm is, you know, winding all the way back, is unattached from your body, and that's how it happens. So, again, I'm not a doctor. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, but that's just how they explain it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it'll be interesting to see, because the MLBPA came out with their statement on the pitch clock, and then the MLB came out with their statement, and both sides are kind of just pointing fingers at the other side. And I know Major League Baseball I know they don't really like the Players Association, but they also don't want to see their product get injured.
Right.
Because when you have all of these guys get hurt, and you're talking about Cy Young Award winners, you're talking about new up-and-coming prospects in Eury Pérez, you're talking about all these guys that, I mean, Shane Bieber, for instance, can't pitch in his contract year. You know, he was trying to get innings under his belt. He was trying to show teams that he could still play. He's what, 29 years old, turning 30 soon. So he's now has to, not only is he missing this year to where he can't get innings under his belt and be the dominant pitcher he's going, but now he's got teams in the back of their mind saying, okay, this guy's 30 years old, coming off of Tommy John surgery. I don't know if we can trust him. Like, how much of a contract are we going to get? So, I mean, that's when it's like, are we really have to, like, let's actually do a study and see what's going on, how we can fix it. Is it moving the pitch clock to 30 seconds instead of 20 seconds? If that's the case, why are we not doing that? Why would we rather have the pitch clock be at 18 seconds and speed up games by 40 minutes? Or we could just keep it at 30 seconds or push it back to 30 seconds and keep everybody on the field healthy.
I just don't think the clock has anything to do with it.
I know. I just use that as an example.
No, but I understand that. That's the players' argument with it. But I just there's nothing in my mind that or something that's out there that can prove to me that the pitch clock is the problem. No way.
No, and I think they even did a study, and it's like they basically debunked it. But I honestly do think, and I don't even think it's because people are throwing faster, because that's just the evolution of everything. I mean, the bodies are getting stronger, they're getting faster, you know, they're getting bigger, all of that stuff. So that just comes with the natural evolution of where we are with sports medicine. But I think it is just because everybody's trying to spin a curveball and slider at such a young age and so much in a game. I remember coming up, it was like you threw a curveball once or twice, maybe five times in a game, but you threw mostly fastball changeups. I remember we didn't learn to throw a curveball till I was like 13, 14 years old. Or at least we didn't start teaching really kids how to throw a good curveball until, you know, 12 to 14 years old. And we were like, hey, you're only going to use this a couple of times in game. You better have a good changeup. So I think, I don't know. I think it's the way we're going into the pitch stuff and how much you can spin a baseball and the RPMs and all this good stuff that is really fun to look at. If a guy can spin a ball 3,000 RPMs, it's really cool. You know, what is Andy talk or Andy and Neil talk about all the time on the broadcast, the X and Y axis or
X
whatever,
and
like
Z break.
Yeah, X and Z break and all this good stuff. It's all fun, but I'd rather have my guy stay on the field healthy.
Yeah, I agree. I don't even know what X and Z means. Couldn't tell you.
I think if you have negative X, it means like the ball's going up or something. I don't know. I try to pay attention when Neil talks about it, but it just goes in one ear, not the other.
Sure.
So, I mean, just, hey, listen. The ball was at the top of the zone. The guy swung and missed. You know, maybe throw that again and see if he swings and misses.
Yeah.
I don't have to see all the X and Z and Y and Pythagorean theorem and all this good stuff. The X, Y slope, you know, MX plus B equals
cosines, tangents. You know, we're talking triangles.
All of this is a little too smart for me. This is why I didn't work in player development. And I'm in broadcasting.
There you go.
But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think somebody else just got hit with a flexor strain. It might have been Valdez, but I thought I saw somebody just went down. It could have been Valdez.
Yeah, I think it was Valdez.
Yeah, I'm not going to try too much to look at it because we're about done with this podcast. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how things go along and how many more injuries we're going to get. Cause I mean, obviously it's not over. I mean, it's not just like, oh, we're 10 games in, everybody's gotten injured. All right, we're just going to keep it for the regular season. So
yeah, no sponsor today. we reached out to a bunch of people. You know, couldn't get it done. So, yeah, we'll have one next week and a promo code for you guys to use.
Nice. So, all right, Harris, good podcast as always. I know we had to end it right now so you can get ready for work or whatever you're doing. So yeah, Florida State beat up on the Gators.
There you go.
I know we're not talking a whole lot of college baseball right now because of the MLB season, but Florida State's for real. Clemson series was just a fluke.
Yeah.
Clemson series was just a fluke. They could have easily swept that series, but they said, hey, you know what, Clemson? You take the number two spot that way when we see you again in the ACC championship game. We're just going to smash it. And I didn't realize Florida's 17-15 this year.
Really?
They're about to be unranked probably.
Yeah.
Depending on what they do in this weekend series.
Well, speaking of Clemson, shout out to the USC Upstate Spartans of the Big South Conference for beating the Clemson Tigers, the number two Clemson Tigers, that is, the other night. Big grand slam from the Upstate Spartans. So, always Big South homer. And, shout out Spartans.
Let's see. Real quick before we go, what are the big series this weekend? NC State Clemson play each other. Let's see. Ooh, Miami goes to Florida State. That could be interesting. Louisville actually looking pretty decent.
They're winning some ball games. How about
Virginia
that?
Virginia goes to Louisville, Kentucky. Let's see. Nebraska is in the top 25. Who else? South Carolina and Florida. South Carolina's not ranked anymore. Interesting. Arkansas, Alabama. Ooh, Vanderbilt, Texas A&M.
Uh-oh.
In College Station. That could be interesting. Let's see. That's about all of the interesting-ish type of games. Mississippi State goes to Ole Miss. SEC series are always just fun to watch. LSU is not ranked anymore. They go to Tennessee, who's the fourth team in the country.
Okay.
So, very interesting.
Interesting.
And your number 19 Louisiana Raging Cajuns.
Yes, the Cajuns.
Marshall.
The best hospitality in the nation.
So, yes. A couple of interesting series. Maybe we'll talk about it next week, but we have a lot of baseball to keep talking about. So,
yes.
Harris, if you have nothing else to add, that's going to be
good.
That's going to be it. My young lad of the week, Jordan Leisure. He's gotten four outings now. Just pitched two innings yesterday. No runs, two strikeouts. Getting closer to being the closer for the White Sox. I don't know what that's going to entail because they absolutely suck this year. So I don't know how many times they'll be able to close out a game. They just got their second win yesterday.
Naturally.
So, but young lad of the week, Jordan Leisure. See you on May 6th, buddy. That's when the White Sox come into town against Tampa. Going to see that, so should be fun.
Yeah,
Harris, if you
I don't think I have a young lad of the week for you. I got a young lad of the week. Kobe Crowe, grand slam against Clemson, clinch a victory. Bam, USC upstate. Go Spartans. Except when play High Point.
That was my high school mascot. Spoto Spartans.
Okay. Yeah.
If anybody listening knows Spoto Spartans, they know that we sucked. So that was not a fun team to be a part of. Anyways, Harris, thanks for joining us. Or joining me, as always, I should say. Peter DeFeo Jr. saying so long. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy the baseball, everybody.